Before you listen to today's broadcast, can I ask you to do three things? First, pray with me that God would use this show to touch many lives in a lasting way. Second, if you're blessed by the broadcast, share it with others. Tell others about the Line of Fire. And third, would you pray about standing with us in support with a one-time gift or as a monthly torchbearer to help us spread the fire? If you'd like to stand with us, go to AskDrBrown.org. Click on support. Be blessed.
Have you ever washed the feet of pastors and leaders who are on the way to persecution and perhaps even martyrdom? I have, and I'll tell you about it today on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the Line of Fire.
This is time for my annual trip to India, trip number 17 to India. And I felt it would be good just to tell you some stories from India, things that I have witnessed and experienced firsthand. I can't take your calls today, but you can interact with me on Facebook at Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown on Facebook. Thank you for tuning in, Michael Brown. Glad to be with you. I've had the privilege of preaching the gospel overseas on more than 100 different trips. Been to Italy 20 different times, been to countries like Korea and Germany 11, 12 different times, been to Israel and other countries a number of times, England many times, been to India now. This is trip number 17. We'll do our best later in the week and maybe even the beginning of the next week to bring you some broadcasts live from India. But today I want to tell you what I've experienced firsthand, what I've been through with brothers and sisters there, their stories, things that we've seen face-to-face in meetings together. It's not hype. This is not a story I heard from someone who heard this. No. This is stuff I've seen and experienced firsthand in India. Let me first tell you about the brother that we work with there, a man named Yesupadam, which means Jesus' foot. He was given that name by his father, who had become a Christian, and he hated the name because he was not a Christian. Himself, Yesupadam was not. The family was horrifically poor. He has taken me to the city where he was born and shown me the tiny little hut that he would have grown up in. You think there's not room for one person there. Well, there were seven, mom, dad, and five kids. I mean, you sleep on the floor and a horrifically impoverished existence. He tells about what it was like to be an untouchable growing up, what it was like to, if kids are drinking water from a fountain, that he had to stand underneath them, and as water dripped through their hands, he had to try to catch it. And he was so weak, he couldn't work, so they sent him to school. One day, a Canadian missionary found him laying on the side of the road, dying of malnutrition, hospitalized in grave condition, and recovered. But rather than being touched by that and having a heart for the gospel, he was hostile. He was hostile to the system. He signed his name in blood, his own blood, to become a communist before he was even a teenager. He became an alcoholic, an atheist, and someone that was engaged actually in violent raids against rich people trying to plunder their goods and hurt them. I mean, you're talking about a communist terrorist, now married, and he's in his 20s and just away from God completely. And he has a vision of Jesus appearing to him, not as clearly as if he was standing in front of him like a human being, but he looked and saw him in the sky with his arms open, saying, "This is how much I love you." And he cried that day, and he's been crying for India ever since, as he's been serving the Lord these many years. He's, what I guess, 60-ish now, maybe early 60s. And he came to the States to meet me. The first time in 1992, and wanted to know about translating some of my books into English. Now, you have to understand, when he came to the States in those early days, this was all brand new to him. The first time he got in the car that had seatbelts that came on automatically, he said, whoa, what's that? He thought he was being assaulted. The first time he went with someone to a store, and they went to the ATM machine to get some cash. You know, the guy puts the card in, gets the cash out, and he stood there stunned. He said, "Is there a person in there? Is this little person in there?" He'd never seen those things. I mean, it's amazing to look back at that, because he's built hospitals and his workers have planted over 300 churches, and they've started a fine school and even junior college and nursing school and all these other things. And he has favor with different leaders in government and so on. But I'm just giving you a picture of how new everything was. He came to see me in the States, and even for him to make the trip was a step of faith to spend the money. He didn't even know if I was going to be there. Anyway, we hooked up, and he asked about translating some of my books into Telugu, which is the language of Andhra Pradesh, spoken by, 60-plus million people, and one of the states in India, Andhra Pradesh. And the reason he wanted to translate some of my books was because they really spoke his language, the language of laying down everything for the gospel. If you've never read my books, How Saved Are We?, or Whatever Happened to the Power of God, or End of the American Gospel Enterprise, if you never read them, I encourage you to get online, buy them, read them, be blessed by them, be challenged by them. But they were basically preaching a message which to him was very much the message that his people in India needed, that the devoted followers, that's how they lived. They followed Jesus by life or by death. They followed Jesus at any cost or any consequence. They understood that they might lose their lives for the gospel, and that's what they signed up for. After all, didn't Jesus say, if anyone, Americans too? Really? Oh, yeah. If anyone wants to come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. And then he says, if you save your life, you lose it. If you lose your life for my sake and the gospel, you find it. In other words, now everything belongs to him, and that's the whole purpose and meaning of life. So we got to talking, found out he wanted me to come over and do some meetings there. So we agreed first time in 1993. This would be my 18th trip to India, because we've gone every year, except 1 year when there were the terrorist attacks, those tragic terrorist attacks in Mumbai. We had to cancel out because that was just the time I was going to be traveling into Mumbai, into Bombay. So we get over there the first time, and we're going to be there for 3 weeks. Nowadays, I can go to places in India, even some rural places, and they may have some place nearby where you can get online, internet access. And when we were traveling in those earliest days, we were in more difficult settings and surroundings, and you kind of cut yourself off from communication. I mean, you might stay in a hotel that cost $2 a night, maybe a dollar a night. If you had AC in the room, it would be $3 a night. The problem was the AC didn't work most of the time because the electric didn't work most of the time. That's the environment that we're in. I'm not saying it was hard. I mean, we're just there for a few weeks. What's the big deal? And we were living like kings compared to people just sleeping on the ground with nothing over their heads. But anyway, we arrive for the meetings, and we fly into Delhi. Yesupada meets us in Delhi, and he takes us then. We were with my wife and I, another couple, another friend, takes the five of us from the international airport to the national airport, where we proceed to sleep on the floor through the night. That was just kind of the way we did it. It became a tradition for some years when I would take students over there. We'd go from the international airport to the national and sleep on the floor for a few hours or overnight until our flight time. Became a tradition. Anyway, we then take a 14-hour train ride, and I pictured India a certain way. I pictured the big cities with a lot of poverty, people on the streets dying and sick like that. I didn't realize the vast expanse of country that there is, of lush land, of primitive-looking land. We wake up in the morning on the train, and Nancy's already standing on one of the cars, looking out the train cars, and we're stunned. The huts, and it looks so primitive. And in fact, you're almost expecting dinosaurs to come. I'm just saying, it was that primitive a setting. At that time, I don't know the count today, but there are roughly 600,000 villages in India. At least half of them with no gospel witness. And the majority of them with no running water and electricity, and that's still the way many, many, many tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people live today in India. We arrive there, finally get into the city of Vishakhapatnam, and now have a five-hour car ride up a mountain to a tribal region called Paderu. This is our first trip to India, 1993. I remember the driver of our car stops as we're going up the road, and he stops at this little shrine. Some Hindu god or goddess comes out with a red dot on his forehead, having prayed in there. We asked Yesupadam's daughter, who was translating for us, why did he do that? She said, we're going up a very dangerous road. So I said, listen, I'll take care of the praying. I'll pray to the one true God. I'll take care of the praying. You just drive. And as we go up the mountain here to Paderu, as we're driving up there, we stop on the side of the road. There are monkeys on the side of the road. I'm talking about primitive area. And we were told that people had to get off the roads by a certain time at night because there was a man-killing tiger on the loose. A man-killing tiger that was on the loose. And it had to kill a certain number of people before they were allowed to hunt it. In which case I learned that tigers were an endangered species there, but not people. And okay, I'm just looking at the clock. I'm going to have to share the rest of the story, but an extraordinary thing happened in Paderu, in a tribal region. Since then, Yesupadam and his team have planted several hundred churches throughout this entire mountainous tribal region. The gospel has gone forth. Martyrs have shed their blood there as well for the gospel. And on the broadcast today, I'm going to tell you some of my first-hand experiences in India, including washing the feet of people who are on their way to certain persecution and possible martyrdom. A reality check, sharing from India today. We'll be back. You don't want to miss it. Thanks so much for joining us today, Michael Brown, coming your way with stories from India. Not taking your calls today. This is the final end of my travel time to India for trip number 17. But I'm giving you some firsthand accounts, things I've seen, touched, experienced in India, people I've worked with, things to stir your own heart. No exaggeration, no hype, only what I've seen with my own eyes and experienced there. So please do pray for fruit on this trip. It's you think of the schedule, leaving December 1st, returning December 7th, and it's basically 4 days of travel and 3 days there ministering, three nights and 3 days. So pray for fruit, pray for anointing, pray for grace, pray for the fire to fall, pray for many lives to be changed. Would you do that? I do appreciate it. And if you're prompted by the Lord to hold our hands up in India, to stand with us as we are literally touching the nations, then go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, click on support, become one of our torchbearers, help us spread the fire, and we'll appreciate it, and God will bless you for it. So, talking about a first trip to India, 1993, first night I preached in a place called Paderu, tribal region. And everything was different. I mean, how do you reach the people? How do you relate to the people? And you realize, okay, people are people. People are people. Same devil, same sin, same flesh, and same God, same spirit, same Jesus. Praise God. Well, the second night of preaching, I felt led to make proclamation. I was told that even though there were, I don't know, 600-something people at the meeting, which I was told was the largest gathering they'd ever had there for a gospel meeting. But I was told, though, that the amplification sounded out into the mountains, into the jungles, where people could hear for miles and miles around. So I proclaimed. I didn't just preach those people. I proclaimed freedom to the captives. I proclaimed that Jesus alone is Lord, that Yahweh is the only true God, and that salvation came through it. I remember as I spoke, I felt like I was proclaiming something far beyond the people there. I literally felt that a proclamation was going into the mountains, into the jungles, for people to hear the good news. Well, we had wanted to actually go out and see some of the villages, but it meant a trek over for us. You know, it was hot. And it was a bit of a trek for us going up this mount. I'm not talking about Mount Everest, okay? But it was just walking. You know, it was hot. It was a little tiring. So we stopped at the top of this one mountain. Then we're going to go down on the other side. And then once we went down on the other side, then that's where we'd get to some of the villages. And as we're waiting there, a man comes walking. I mean, just dressed in tribal, not much on him. He comes walking with his daughter, and she looks like an absolute wreck, and there are marks on her body where she's been burned and where she's been tied up. Something happened to her a few weeks ago. She was suddenly demonized. They went to the witch doctor. He tried to burn the spirits out and so on. And so he had gone into the government village to the doctors there, and they couldn't help her. They were walking back. So we just began to minister to her. And it was about a two-hour battle in this mountain. You could see walking around where the animals were there at night, left their remains behind. You know, there were bears and tigers and other large animals that we were told were out there at night in the jungle area. I'm just trying to give you a picture of something that was a complete different world to me. And I remember saying to myself, I had this shirt on that had Hebrew about, a light to the nations and the glory of God of Israel. I thought, well, this is my role as a Jew, to be a light to the nations. That's part of my role. And I had given an outreach lecture at Yale University not long before that, and delivered an academic paper at Harvard not long before that. And I remember thinking, this is a long way from Harvard and Yale. This is a different world here. And finally, after a couple hours of praying back and forth, different ones ministering to this girl, she was set free. And we look, we got to realize we're in the most middle of nowhere place I've ever been in my life. We look around, it's like, whoa, what happened? There's a group of men on one side. I don't mean hundreds, but dozen, 15, maybe a little more. A group of men, they've just come walking up on the mountain. And a group of women, there on the other side, they just come walking up. What are they doing there? It was a first fruits of a sign to us that liberty was coming to the captives. They had just wandered up on the mountain there. And we began to proclaim to them the one true God who created everything and loves us and came into this world to die for us so we could have salvation. And the men seemed to very openly receive the gospel, and the women seemed to really openly receive the gospel. And even some of them began to renounce their idols and the workers there. So these tribal people do it. They do it. They may not understand a lot, but when they make these commitments, it's real. They don't just say the words. And the next month, when they said every April they would send students from their discipleship training center, because we were there in March. In April, they would send students from the discipleship training center into the villages of Padera to plant churches. And when they wrote to us later on, they said, it's unbelievable. Signs, wonders, and miracles. People being saved. We've never seen anything like this. Something actually broke in the region. I'm telling you, and they've been laboring there ever since. Well, the last meetings we were going to have on trip number one to India, they were in the city Vishakhapatnam, which is east coast on the south part of India, southeast India. And Yesupadam, who had organized the meetings, decided that he wanted to do them in a different location where gospel meetings were normally not held. So we went to this place. It was kind of like an industrial area, got a field where you could get about 5,000 people in. And God was moving in the meetings. It was the last night. I was preaching a message on spiritual hunger. I was preaching a message on hungering and thirsting after God. And suddenly the power went out. Power went out. The generator, whatever it was that was working for our voices, for the audio, went out. The lights were still on, but the power was out. So we look at each other, what do we do? And I just had in my heart, let's call to the people to come forward and just cry out to God and seek God. I was pretty much done with my message. I was talking about revival, visitation, seeking God. So people start running forward, and now people start running through the crowd because you couldn't hear anything. Start running out through the crowd saying, come, come. Now people start running. Next thing, there are several thousand people running forward, coming to the altar, and they begin to cry out. For about 45 minutes, people crying out, seeking the face of God, crying to God for revival, asking him to visit. I was told it was an unprecedented outpouring of prayer like that. And I was looking, I could see in the back of the field, I could see trucks stopping, buses stopping, and I thought they were just making stops to pick people up. Some people just get on the trucks and ride, sit in the back of the trucks. And I just thought they were making stops. I saw it. Come to find out, the next day, that's not what happened. Trucks and buses, as they were driving by the field, looked in through the gate and saw people burning. They saw people on fire. I kid you not. They saw people burning on fire, and they stopped to see what the sight was, only to find out it was people praying to God for the fire to fall. I saw it happen in India, and of course, many radically touched. We come back, the near riot in Karamchedu. What do you do when Hindu radicals take over the stage while you're preaching? Michael Brown here. Thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire. I'm sharing stories with you from India, some of the things I've experienced on these 16, now 17 trips to India. God willing, we'll also be coming your way live from India on this trip. But I can't take calls today. However, you can interact with me on our Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown on Facebook, or on our website, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. And can I encourage you, when you go to our website, AskDrBrown.org, click on online resources, and we've got hundreds of hours of free messages. Listen to them. Listen to some of the ones on revival and spiritual revolution. Listen to things that will challenge you. Look, the whole purpose of our broadcast, the whole focus of our ministry is to help spark moral, cultural, spiritual revolution. That means the church being the church, that is going to church, being the church, and then the church living out the message, the messianic congregation of the Lord living out the message in our society and taking this message to the ends of the earth. Well, one of the early trips, we're there for a whole month in India. And again, we're working with people. Yesupad and the brother we work with years earlier had been stoned for preaching the gospel. He was in a city called Tuni. He went into a village, asked them if they knew Jesus, and they thought it was some place or some person that, you know, maybe in the next village they can tell you where that is or who that is. And he realized, you don't even know the name of Jesus. Right here, my own country, India. So he went to share the gospel there, and the Hindu elders of the village told them, don't come in here and preach. If you do, we'll stone you. Well, he did, they did. He preached, they stoned him. He still got the scar on his forehead and the broken finger to show it. As he fell to the ground bleeding, he had this tremendous sense of privilege, and he said, Jesus, you gave your blood for this village. Now I give my blood for this village. I claim this village for you. And about three-quarters of the village ended up getting saved, and the elders who stoned him became elders in his church. In fact, I had a meal, some rice at the home of one of the pastors who was one of the elders who had stoned him years earlier. I was in that very city. These are the type of people that we're working with in India, this quality of life. And we had been on one of our trips, our second trip there, where we were getting ready. We had a team of 10 people. We were getting ready to go out after two and a half days of travel to get there, Sunday morning service. And they're praying for us before we go out on 17 days of literally nonstop, day and night ministry travel for the next 17 days. And they called everyone to pray. And their kids in the children's home. In fact, there's a link on our website, AskDrBrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. There's a link if you'd like to support one of these orphans I'm about to tell you about in India, or support one of the local pastors. There's a website, LNC Ministries, as in love and care, lncministries.org. Go there, support an orphan on a monthly basis, support a pastor on a monthly basis. You'll have treasure in heaven. You'll have a lot of treasure in heaven as you do it, and you'll know, hey, I spent my money well. I made a good investment every month. Well, these kids went to pray, about 75 in the children's home then, now probably between all the homes, closer to 500. About 75 kids, they get on their knees, they begin to pray. We're on this dirt floor in this long hut where the home church met. And as they're praying, we begin to see, our team of 10, we begin to see tears streaming down their cheeks. Not all of them. I mean, they're all eyes closed, all of them eyes closed, hands raised. From the age of 3 and a half up in the children's home there, they get up at 4:30 in the morning and pray for an hour. Mm-hmm, they do. Yeah, they do. Mm-hmm. I'm not exaggerating. And these kids are praying, and we see some of them. We actually have it on film. Some of them, tears streaming down their cheeks. And they're praying for the lost. They're praying, 5 years old, tears streaming down their cheeks, praying for people to be saved in India. And our team looked at that. They were devastated. First, they thought, what are we doing here? What do we have to offer people like this? That's the first thing they felt. And then the second thing was, if that's Christianity, I'm not saved. They were that devastated by it. Those are the quality of people we're working with. Well, trip number three, we're going into a village called Karamcheru. And this was a dangerous place because it was a high caste village where several years earlier, maybe about 9 years earlier, there was an uprising when there was one of the high caste girls was romantically involved with an untouchable, a Dalit, as they're called, in the neighboring village. And they were high caste people, outraged, and riots broke out, and many, many people, as many as 200 people, were killed in the riots. So there was a lot of blood on their hands. And there was a church almost underground there in the city. Almost no one knew they existed, about 50 people, very cautious because of the militant Hinduism in the village. And they begged us to come and preach. I remember we arrived like 3 in the morning, one of the most horrific roads we were ever on. One time in India, we traveled 22 hours by car and went under 300 miles. That's how some of the roads can be. We arrived close to 3 in the morning, maybe past. But they begged us to come and preach. And the pastor and the woman at whose home we were staying said, listen, whatever you do, do not talk about idolatry because the people here worship many different gods. They're very devoted to their gods. Do not mention murder because of the bloodshed a few years back. And do not talk about adultery because the men here are very adulterous. And we said, both Yesu Padam was going to be translating, and I, we both said, we'll be careful, because after all, we have to leave them there when we go. We'll be careful, but we have to speak what the Lord gives us. And God leads me. Listen, I'm not some joker, especially in a setting like that that could be dangerous for everyone on the team. And I got a clear message from the Lord. Preach on the Ten Commandments. Preach on the Ten Commandments. Idolatry, murder, adultery. I felt clearly that's what the Lord told me to preach. First half of the message was that they're all condemned and damned. Second half of the message, but there's mercy and grace. And I remember that night, it was a very rough, difficult environment. They weren't even sure if we should come out and preach. And I remember praying, God, protect everyone, protect everyone. And I thought, no, that's not the right way to pray. It's not the right way to pray. Lord, I'm willing. I thought, am I willing to die for these people? I thought, I don't even know them. If I'm going to die for the gospel, I mean, let it be Jerusalem. That's what I'm thinking, honestly. I said, what if they beat me, attack me? Would I be willing? I thought, for the gospel? Yeah. I'm just telling you the prayer process I went through in this back room, and then they said, okay, come on out. I want you to come out and preach. Well, the next night, things got testier. As the worship leader was sharing his testimony, talking about how he used to worship snakes, God, and so on. If a snake came in his room now, he'd just step on it. He's not afraid of it. Well, they were very devoted to the snake god there. The uproar started. They brought me up to preach. As I'm speaking, just trying to bring a message of life to the people, trying to give them the words of Jesus, Hindu radicals took over the stage, took the mics from us. I didn't see them, but the others, our fellow workers, these guys had knives, razor blades in their hands. You didn't know what was going to happen. The thing was about to explode, and then they let us leave peacefully. The next morning, though, before we were leaving the city, one of the brothers came to me and said, you know, it's a shame we left like that. We didn't want anything to happen to the foreigners. We didn't want you to get banned from the country, but if it had just been us, we would have preached till they beat us into the ground. A few years later, my own daughter and her husband went there, preached the gospel, and the doors were much more wide open in Karamcheru. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Line of Fire. Michael Brown sharing stories with you from India, but I can't take calls today. Hopefully tomorrow I'll be with you live from India on The Line of Fire, able to take your calls and tell you what's happening on this trip. But please go to our website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Click on the link there to Love and Care Ministries, lncministries.org, and get behind them. Get behind sponsoring one of their children in the children's home or one of the pastors. $30 a month, I think you can sponsor a pastor full-time laboring in the tribal regions in India. Let me share with you now one of the most sacred experiences I've ever had in my life. We were traveling over to India about 10 years ago. A missionary, Australian missionary, and his two sons that were doing work among the poorest to the poor, leprosy mission, those kind of things. They had been burned to death while sleeping in their car overnight by Hindu radicals. The wife forgave them, said she and her daughter were staying in the country. It shook the nation. But there was a wave of persecution that broke out, state of Orissa and other places, because of which we couldn't have big public meetings on that particular trip. We've had meetings, the biggest have been about 40,000 at night and 7,000 pastors in the day, but other times just smaller meetings with a few hundred people. And this particular year, they said, we can't do public night meetings. We have to keep everything on our own grounds, and it's too dangerous. So I arrive, and they had me staying at a hotel nearby. Sometimes we stay right on the grounds with the folks, and just very, very simple living, put it that way. This particular time, they put me in a hotel, and I'm driving from the hotel to the meeting, and there's some men that I see walking, some just barefoot, others in barely anything on. And they're walking to the meeting, some with absolutely nothing, others with at most a briefcase. And this year they've traveled for 2 days from Orissa to be here. And I started to cry. I thought, I'm not worthy to minister to these people. They're going to be here for several days. They got the shirt on their back. That's basically it. Some of them have been threatened. Others have had fellow workers killed for the gospel. So I really wrestled. How can I say anything to them? And the Lord began to encourage me. In the context of my own life and situations I had been in that were challenging, or we had to lose things for the gospel, we had stood for what was right. We had a team of students that were with us. They were going out in the villages to evangelize in the daytime and joining us for the meetings at night. And each day I felt stronger to strengthen them in the faith and strengthen them in the Lord. And one day I challenged the leaders. I told them a story of a missionary in South Africa. They ran out of money. They couldn't supply things for their workers because they had been slandered, misrepresented. The word got out. They had the money they needed. They didn't. People potentially were going to die on the field. And they said, listen, if we live or if we die, we're going to stay here. We just want you to bury us. That's what they told the missionary leader. And they took communion and they said, not just the blood of Jesus, but our blood. We pledge our blood for the gospel. We all drink and partake of his blood, his sacrifice. Well, I finished the message, and next thing, people scurrying around, and they get out bread and grape juice. They want to take communion. They've all said, we want to take communion. And I remember these pastors and leaders getting up, weeping, wailing, as they took the same, my blood for the gospel. I remember one pastor standing up, thrusting his shoulders back, and he talked about people that have been killed in his own region, martyred for the gospel. And he said he was getting calls every day. Look at your wife, look at your kids, you're never going to see them again. We're going to kill you. We're going to kill you. And he thrust his shoulders back. He said, why die a natural death when I can die a martyr's death? These are some of the people we work with in India, friends. Why die a natural death when I can die a martyr's death? It was Brother Andrew who said, our Lord said, go. He said nothing about coming back. And he said, for me to live is Christ, to die is gain. We know that verse, Philippians 1:21. Do we know Philippians 1:20? For I eagerly expect and hope that I will in no way be ashamed, Paul said. But what was his confident expectation? That now, whether by life or death, Messiah will be glorified in my body. That's what I live for me to live is Christ, to die is gain. The next day was the last day that we'd have these pastors and leaders with us before they headed back to Orissa. And the students from our ministry school, which is now Fire School of Ministry, that was then Brownsville Revival School of Ministry, they were with us for this meeting. And preached again, laying down our lives for the gospel, the cost of following Jesus, the courage that Goliath would fall, that the kingdom of God would triumph. And when we finished the meeting, again, people scurrying around. We were about to lay hands on them and send them out. And someone said, no, we just want them all to sit down. And we brought out these buckets of water. And we knelt and began to wash the feet of people on the way back to certain persecution and potential martyrdom. I'll tell you what happened on the other side of the break. All right, friends, as you're listening to this broadcast today, I am in India by God's grace serving some of the most precious people I know anywhere in the world. If you'd like to be part of what we're doing or stand with the work in India, go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and click on the links there for today's show on the Line of Fire. And if you've never read the book, How Saved Are We?, make an investment, read it. That was the first book that was translated of mine into Telugu. And it was translated by the workers there because this was the gospel they related to. So if you're just tuning in, talking about a previous trip to India, we're in the city of Vishakhapatnam. It's our last meeting with pastors and leaders that have come from Orissa, mainly men, some women as well. Others of their co-workers have been killed for the faith. Recent horrific persecutions broken out there in the last couple of years. It's still very difficult in Orissa. We'll be working, as I'm speaking to you here by radio today, we'll be working in India with people from the state of Orissa. I'm hoping to do an interview and bring that interview back here to play for you in the States. But it's the last day. We've called up these leaders. We're about to lay hands on them. There was a medical doctor who was on the trip with me, and he had asked, he was a student at our school, he had asked, could we wash the feet of these people before they go? And I said, sure, but I forgot about it. Well, this is one of the most sacred experiences I've ever had in my entire life. Students from our ministry school were there as well. We sat these people down in chairs, and we came out with buckets of water, and we got on our hands and knees and began to wash their feet. Most of them barefoot, filthy feet walking through the dirt there. And they tried to push us away because they were so humbled here. They thought so highly of us, these Americans. It's, of course, quite the reverse, that we were washing their feet. And they were weeping and crying. They know they're going back to persecution, potential martyrdom, and they just want to see Jesus glorified. They just want to see people come into the kingdom. And we're washing their feet, and we're crying and crying. And I'm looking in the eyes of the students so that we're all just bawling. And they're crying. And it was an overwhelming experience. But what happened next, I can't convey the depth of it. They then sat us down and proceeded to take off our shoes. So I was wearing shoes and socks, and soles of my feet are soft. I'm not out in the dirt and the rocks walking. And they, I'm telling you without exaggeration, some of them, including a dear brother, friend of mine, an Indian, were crying so hysterically. I am not exaggerating. They were washing my feet with tears. And we were all weeping because all we cared about was seeing Jesus glorified. All we wanted to see was Jesus exalted in India. And souls coming into the kingdom, and people who are blind in Hinduism and Islam and atheism, whatever else was there, this come into the kingdom. And when the meeting was over, the students stood around me, and one of them said, Dr. Brown, we got to wash the feet of people who are going to be martyrs. I said, listen, that's why you're here on this trip with me. I said, forget about the Western gospel version, forget about the American gospel version, all of our carnality, it's all about me and performance and nonsense. I said, forget about that. I said, this is the gospel. This is the gospel, by life or by death, following Jesus. Friends, that's why I go to India every year. That's why I counted the privilege to serve these people. One of the men in India we laid hands on sent out a few years earlier last year was martyred for his faith. Killed for the gospel. Blood is being shed for Jesus, and souls are being brought into the kingdom. The blood of the martyrs is the seed. Listen, I didn't plan on saying this, but maybe God's calling you to be trained, equipped, sent out Fire School of Ministry is receiving students this January for the first time in years. There's still time to get in, so go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Click on Fire School of Ministry. Maybe we'll have the privilege of sending you out. Pray for me that there'll be much fruit on this trip, and hopefully tomorrow I'll be coming your way live from India here in the Line of Fire.